Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Well, I'm going to spend the next 25 minutes to talk about the fund, the strategy, how we are positioned. So Blue Whale Capital is a new business that was set up between Peter Hargreaves and myself back in 2016. And we launched a global long-only fund, Blue Whale Growth Fund, in September 2017. So we have just gone past 2-year track records. And the way that we go about investing in stocks is we employ a high conviction approach in companies. And typically we invest into 25 to 35 companies. What we do differently is we spend a lot of time researching on a company and at the same time building financial model and making forecasts. So within the team at Blue Whale, there are 5 of us on the investment side. And if you have 5 people focusing at about 25 to 30 companies, then you can expect that we spend a lot more time per holding compared to some of our other peers that might have less headcount, or maybe they're running a more diversified portfolio, let's say 75 stocks. So that is our formula. And the DNA within the team is we do embrace a team effort. So everything is debated as a team together. And then we focus on different stocks and sector. And the outcome of that is then we would have a portfolio that we feel that we have the highest conviction in. And that's what you see on the fact sheet today. This is what we feel that we could add value on over the next 18 to 24 months. The other thing that we feel that we are adding value, as I touched on earlier in my earlier talk, is that we do feel that the market has become more efficient, which means that you could invest into a high quality business, but the valuation could become more expensive in time. And if we want to continue to do better than the market, then we need to ensure that the price that we pay when we first invested continue to be attractive while we hold the shares over the medium term. So if we feel that at any one point in time that if we feel that the valuation is no longer attractive, then we will act on that. Either we will reduce the position or we might replace the stock with something that we feel is more attractive. And both of them would equally be high quality businesses. And so I myself worked in the industry for close to 20 years, and I'm in my early 40s, so you will expect to see me for the many years to come at Blue Whale. So the fund that we decided to launch as our flagship product is a global long-only fund. We focus our investment in the developed markets, mostly in the US. So if you look at our fact sheet, that we have about 70% in US stocks. And at the same time that we focus in large to mega cap companies. So the average market cap of our holdings in the portfolio today is over 100 billion pounds. And the smallest company that we have in the fund is over $5 billion. So it's not the companies that you that are here today that are in a small cap or micro cap space. So we are not in that area. And we started the fund with 25 million pounds 2 years ago, and we have just surpassed 200 million recently. And depending on which platform you buy the fund from, and we charge a fee of 0.75% or 1% per annum, and we don't charge a performance fee. So what's our investment philosophy? Our investment philosophy is very simple. It's basically to identify high quality businesses and then invest into them at an attractive price. And we constantly re-evaluate number 1 and 2. So the first part of the equation is straightforward, which I would take you through what we consider as high quality business. But the second part, which is determining the price or the valuation, is the tricky part, or is the part that require us constantly spending a lot of time reassessing the assumption that we put into our financial model, which I will take you through shortly. The way that we go about research is that everything that we do is in-house. So we do not use any broker research. We don't speak to any sell-side analysts. And then we try to form our understanding of the company from primary sources. So anything that you can get your hands on a company, any reports, investor day, results, conferences, speaking to the management, this is the thing that would form a big part of our research process. And of course, when we refer to any report, we don't just read one annual report. I mean, we will go back for the annual report of many years that the company has been in operation. And also we use the same approach to assess the competitor of those companies. So we would then do the same amount of work on those competitors to make sure that the company we invest into continue to be very competitive and they are the market leader. So they're not losing market share. This is how we define a high quality business. So we like companies that are competitively positioned. And typically for the company that are well positioned, you would expect that they have a lot of market share. So they are the market leader by itself in the sector that they operate. And then you would also expect that they have a lot of pricing power. So if they raise prices, then they could still maintain their market share. Disruptions that we dislike companies that are under some sort of challenge in terms of having their business model disrupted, and we would prefer to invest into disruptors, which we got a feel on our top 10 holdings. For example, PayPal is a company that we like a lot since we started the fund 2 years ago, and we still like it. And we see PayPal as a disruptor to the traditional payment space. So disruption that, but at the same time that we want to avoid companies that might be under some sort of challenge in terms of their business model. We like companies that can grow. So typically we like companies that could grow irrespective of what happened on the macro level or economic level. So if a company has some sort of structural driver to their top line or earnings, then we would like that kind of drivers for those companies. So typically, we want to avoid companies that are reliant on cyclical drivers. So let's say if a company that is exposed to the oil price, let's say something that they can't control themselves, then of course, when the oil price is going up, then if you are producing oil, then you would do well. But if the oil price goes the other way around, based on different reasons, then your company might not do as well. So we dislike that kind of cyclical drivers, that we like company that could continue to grow irrespective of what's happening in on a macro level. In terms of macro sensitivity, which I would expand on this later as well, is that we try to avoid companies that are exposed to a lot of uncertainty that you see in the world now. So anything that you see on a headline, like in a newspaper, like Brexit, China slowing down, the protests in Hong Kong, etc. If the company is exposed to some sort of market that their earnings are dependent on those issues getting resolved, then we want to avoid those companies. Of course, everything is on a relative basis. You can't avoid everything. Like any company operate in a real world, but I'm talking about on a relative basis that we want to have less exposure to those macro uncertainty compared to the rest of the market, which then could help us to do well. We like company with a strong balance sheet. If you look at the underlying holdings that we have in the fund, not only that on the fund level that we are holding about 10% cash, but at the same time, the company that we have in the fund on an aggregated basis, that they are also net cash. So our company on an aggregated basis are not financially geared. So they could continue to do well even. So let's say if we do have a recession tomorrow, we feel quite confident that they're not highly geared or they need to raise capital. So they are net cash. And last but not least, management team is very important. You always want to invest into a company that are run by an experienced management team with a good track record. If not in this company, would be in other company they have worked at before. And the way that we assess the quality of a management team is not only looking at their track record, looking at their incentive structure, but also looking at how well they have delivered the strategy they set out to do. So if you keep track of a company like a chief executive who set out strategies to say, I'm going to have this plan for the next 5 years, and you keep tracking the company, and every quarter they would come out with a new set of results, and you want to ensure they keep delivering to what they set out to do. If they can do that and beat expectation, then it shows that they are actually, then the plan is doable. So we want to measure that. So we dislike company who probably would come up with a plan and then change their mind on that, and then they miss the forecast or expectations, which is considered as a profit warning. In terms of determining the price, how attractive it would be, there are multiple ways of doing this. So one way of doing this, which I will go into a lot more in my next slide, is that after we build a financial model, we'll try to make forecasts over the medium term. And I will expand more on that later on the first point. The second point is we also look at absolute valuation. So anything that is in absolute sense, whether it's P/E ratio, free cash flow yield, etc., we will compare that against the market, the peer group, and the history. And the way to think about this is, if I give you two names that are equally high quality business, one is Adobe, is a top 10 holding in our fund. The other company is Diageo, so which is a company that we will all be familiar with. And you could argue that both companies are very high quality business in a completely different industry. But the commonality between the two business, if you look at the headline P/E ratio over the next year, 2 years, both companies are trading at a premium to the market, significant premium to the market, because they're high quality business and they have done well over the last 2 years. But if you do the work behind the scene, go behind the scene to do the work and make some sensible assumption over the next 5 years, which is what we do internally, this is something proprietary, that based on our assumption that Adobe's valuation is trading at a discount to the market in five years from today. In contrast, Diageo, in 5 years from today, is still trading at a premium. So you can make argument on both sides. You can argue that Diageo is so high quality that even in 5 years' time, you are happy to pay a premium. Or maybe you can argue that Adobe, maybe we feel that it's high quality business, but you don't feel, but the market doesn't recognize that, so it's trading at a discount in 5 years' time. But to us, that our take on both companies is that we deem them as equally high quality. If not, Adobe is actually higher quality than Diageo, because Adobe is a subscription piece of software that's market leader in its own right. So that is something that would give us comfort, that we feel that based on everything that we factor in, that on an absolute basis, that Adobe is trading attractively in terms of price. But that is not enough. So I would now go back to the first point about how we go about identifying some sort of edge against the market, which is important. The way that we approach this is, after we have done a lot of work on a company, we would then translate our understanding into some sort of assumption on what the company could deliver over the next 3 to 5 years. Okay, without parking the 5 year aside, because you can't actually compare the number for 5 years, but in terms of the headline numbers that you can make a reference to, which is a collective of sell side analyst estimates, you can have that for up to 3 years from today. So if you imagine the market is expecting this company to deliver £100 in 3 years' time, so this company today, the market expected the company to deliver £100 in 3 years' time in terms of earnings. And based on our understanding of the business, we have made a forecast and we expect the company to deliver £110 in 3 years' time. If our number proved to be right, okay, you need to be right. You can't just make any assumptions and forecasts, because then it will be garbage in, garbage out. So you need to be right. But if we prove to be right, then it means that we are 10% again ahead of the consensus, 110 versus 100. And there are two things likely to happen. One is that the shares is likely to be undervalued at the current multiple, because that current multiple is based on £100. That is the consensus. But our real number, which is not happened yet in 3 years' time, is 110. So it's likely that the shares is undervalued. Or the other way to think about this, if we prove to be right, then you would expect earnings revision upgrades over the course of next 2 years to get to 110. So which makes the shares cheaper as well. So what we try to do is that we try to factor in some conservative assumption, and then just on an ongoing basis, every quarter, that our forecasts over the medium term are ahead of the consensus. And there are many ways that this gap would change. One is that there could be new information coming into our assumption that maybe that they have this product that we expected them to do quite well, but they didn't, or they failed to deliver, then we adjust our number. But more often than not, the market could catch up with our expectations. So without changing our forecast at 110, when we first invested, let's say today, in 6 months' time, we are still forecasting 110 on a rolling basis, but the market's now caught up with our expectation, become more optimistic about the prospect of the company, and the market's now expecting 120. So suddenly, if you're comparing our number at 110, the market 120. So we're behind the consensus. And then that's when we would probably decide that the company, the shares is overvalued. So it becomes less attractive in our view compared to the day that we first invest into shares. The other point that's very important for us to construct some sort of financial model is we also want to translate our understanding of the macro drivers to a company earnings. So of course, everyone can read about the kind of the macro implication for some sectors or company. But the most important bit ultimately is to be able to quantify the impact. So if you look at the historical financial over the last 5 years, and then you see that this company has been driven by some sort of basically going into some new market, let's say some auto OEM, like German auto OEM, let's say BMW selling more cars to China, selling cars to the US, but then suddenly you now have the Trump tariff, you now have the China slowing down, etc. So going forward, how are you going to factor in those uncertainty? For us, that we don't claim that we can take a view on those issues. So we are going to make some very conservative assumption to say that we don't know what's going to happen, but likely that you're going to sell less cars to China. Because if there's some sort of tariff, then maybe your pricing can't increase anymore. So that's a lot of things. So we want to quantify some of the macro things onto our forecast. And then last but not least, we aimed with this valuation approach that we aim to do a bit better than just holding a company without doing anything, because we feel that the valuation could be overvalued, which then led to lesser of our performance. In terms of company that we invested to, that I already mentioned that there's a team of five, but of course the market, the world is very big. So we only focus on company or sectors that we feel we can add value. And of course, if you're making a reference to the MSCI World Index, there's 1,600 stocks. So we are not covering 1,600 stocks. We only cover about 100 companies. So these 100 companies are the companies that we have done work on, and we also deem them as high quality businesses. So there's another 1,500 that we don't do. So some of those companies that we don't do, that we feel that they're structurally challenged, so they're low quality businesses. But then there's a lot other companies that we do not feel that we can add any level of expertise on top. So let's say if you ask us to make some forecast on oil price or commodity copper prices, we don't feel that we can add value. But if you were to invest into BP or Shell or Rio Tinto, you do need to take a view on the commodity prices in terms of the trajectory. Otherwise, then you can't, your forecast about the company's earnings would not be able to justify the valuation that they're trading at. On the right hand side, so once we have done all the work on the company, then we try to pick the best 25 to 30 companies into the fund. So, and then you have the rest sitting on the watch list. And within the fund itself, that you can think about the fund in two halves. So about half of the fund that we like the market leaders of the fourth industrial revolution. So they will range from disruptors such as PayPal to companies that help, that facilitate enterprises to make digital transformation, which we have the Adobe, Autodesk, or Viva, some of the names on our top 10. And typically all these companies are quite high growth. So they are exposed to some sort of structural drivers, as I outlined earlier. And they could continue to do well irrespective of what happened with Trump tariff. The other half of the portfolio are the lower growth company, and typically they would be the health, the med tech in healthcare, some consumer brands, staples and our hotels. And then we do have that in the fund as well. But for that part of the portfolio, it's all about valuation, because the ultimate outperformance in the equation for the lower growth company is about the price you pay. If you pay, you can pay an attractive price, then you get some sort of re-rating, which means then that is part of the overall outperformance contributor. And if you pay a very high price and a company is not growing that much, then you are probably not going to generate outperformance. So that is very important. So the entry price is very important for the lower growth company. So what would drive us to sell a company or reduce a stock holding? So the first one is the most important. So this is the opposite of what I have on the how we define a high quality business. If a company is at risk of seeing some sort of disruption to their business model, this is where you would get a permanent loss of capital. And this is something that we are very conscious about, that we did have a few companies that we managed to spot the transition quicker, and then we sold out. And then after that, the share price suffered a lot, which I can take you through if you're interested later. And secondly, which happened more often, over the last 2 years that we've been running the fund, is the valuation has become more expensive. And the way that I already outlined earlier is that our forecast ended up behind the consensus. So we no longer feel that we have an edge. We're no longer ahead of the market. So that would cause us to either reduce the holding to have a smaller position over the time horizon that we're taking a view on the stock on, or we might replace it with something more competitive, which is the last point, that if we have another holding that are equally high quality, but we feel that the price is more attractive, then we want to have that company into this fund. How do we define risk? So in contrast to most investors, we do not define risk as volatility. So volatility means that it's the share price movement with no reference to company fundamentals. The only risk that we define in the fund is permanent loss of capital. So any share price movement that are related to company fundamentals or news, that is important. Of course, then we have to quantify it, whether the market has overreacted or whether we should act on the new information. But anything else outside of issues that are related to company, we are not very concerned. So what I've shown you here in terms of the table, this is the performance that we deliver last year, that without going into detail, that you can see in Q4 2018, our stocks also got sold off in line with the market. So we were down about 12% in line with the market. But what we managed to deliver was that we didn't lose any of the outperformance that we achieved from Q1 to Q3. Hence, we ended up delivering 8.6% versus minus 5.6 for our peer group, and the market was down about 3%. So we have outperformed the market by over 10% last year. But in particular, what happened in Q4 18 was that when we went through the result season, the earnings season, which is a quarterly exercise, that none of our company or holdings in the fund reported some sort of profit warning, because they managed to continue to deliver to our expectation. They continue to grow. They did not lower the guidance for 2019. And hence, this year, if you look at the performance of the fund, that in Q1 or Q2, that the fund have even done better. So basically recovering all the loss of performance in Q4. So this is one thing that's quite unique, but I think it's quite difficult for me to actually to give you a good feel on how we work together as a team, because you only see me here, but there's another four people working very hard in the office now. But the way that we feel that we are adding value in terms of how we approach the investment process that we have is we really work as a team. And every one of us is expected to challenge each other from the quality of the business, so different issues that the business might face, to the assumption that we use in our financial model and forecast. So that this is a constant exercise. And just to give you one example, that PayPal being one of our top 10 holdings since we started, we probably have spent over 100 hours debating on the stock. So just debating between the five of us, on top of the few hundred hours we've spent on researching the companies. So this is a very value-adding part of our process, that we constantly challenge the thesis, that we want to make sure that PayPal would remain a disruptor and it's not going to get disrupted by Google Pay, Amazon Pay, or anything you can think of. And then what we then do is that we translate our conclusion into the portfolio. So the portfolio that you see on our top 10, which account for about half of the fund, would reflect the highest conviction part of our process, which is a combination of the quality of the business and also how attractive the valuation is. In terms of some of the characteristics that you would expect from the fund, I already outlined that the top 10 position account for about half the fund. So this is where you would expect a lot of work has been gone behind the scene. And at the same time that you will notice on the fact sheet that we are running about 10% cash on a fund level. And at the peak this year that we were, the cash level peaked at about 15. So since then, we have been working on some new ideas. So the cash has now come down to about 10. But when we first started the fund, the cash level was less than 5%. So you should expect under normal market conditions, which we don't think at the moment we're under some sort of normal market condition that is quite volatile in terms of how the some of this macro uncertainty, that over the medium term, you would expect the cash position to come down. The other thing is from time to time when we are working on new ideas that we want to keep our exposure to the market. So we do utilize at the moment in the portfolio, we do have about up to 10% in ETF, which is basically MSCI World. So, but in time that once we get enough ideas in the fund, then that would disappear as well. So that is the managed fund figure that you see on the fact sheet. The last 2 points is very important. So when would you expect the fund to do well? As I already outlined earlier, that this is a high conviction portfolio, about 30 stocks, and the market has about 1,600 stocks. So you would expect that we would do particularly well if the market focused on company fundamentals, which is typically through the earnings result season, then the market refocus on fundamentals. But we would do less well, at least on a relative basis, when the market is focusing on macro. If the market is focusing on some sort of sector rotation into banks, oil and gas or mining, which we don't have any, that on a relative basis, we'll do less well. And I can expand on that if you're interested. Over the last 2.5 months, that we probably have experienced some of this, that the market has become very positive about some of these more cyclical sectors which don't think the rally is sustainable. This is just a slide on the positioning, and you already have that in your on the fact sheet. And then lastly, this is our performance. So we, for the last 2 years, we have been running the fund that the net annualized return was about 2x of the peer group return at 15.7 versus 7.1%. And then currently we are ranked number 4 in our sector, our 300 funds.
Excellent presentation. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
PIWorld videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PIWorld is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.